Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. The former CEO of Pepsi, NFL players, you name it, veterans are out there doing it, and my goal is to learn from them what they do and how they got there. My guest today for episode number 105 is Nathan Smith.
If you don't have a narrow vision of what you want so that you can focus, if you're open to everything, which is kind of the infamous line that we get from most of the people we work with, hey, I'll move anywhere and I'll do anything, and they think that makes it easier for you to help them find a job, whereas it's the exact opposite, right? What we need is for you to narrow down and focus, align with mentors who are out there, align with organizations like us, and together, you know, we can overcome the structural divide between the all-volunteer force and a society that less and less knows what the all-volunteer force goes through.
Well, as you'll learn today, Nathan is the Chief Operations Officer at an organization called Hire Heroes USA. I've segmented this interview so that the first part we talk about Hire Heroes USA because it's a great and completely free organization for veterans that helps them in their transition. They pair you up with someone, you work with them one-on-one, and you work with them until you find exactly what you're looking for. So it's a lot of resources, and Nathan has worked with, they've worked with over 17,000 veterans and families over the last 8 years. So he's got a lot of great advice on things. One of the things in particular I really enjoyed is his talk about getting involved with either volunteering or in some way scratching that itch to give back and using that to build momentum for your career. It's also a great interview because Nathan talks about the stress he faced in his own transition and how that led to Hire Heroes and him giving back and helping other veterans. But it's also a great look at a COO role, a discussion about why veterans might enjoy a career in operations, as well as why they might enjoy a career in nonprofits. And he talks about how, you know, one of the themes that comes up in these interviews is so many veterans miss that camaraderie. They miss that aspect of giving back. And I think that Nathan's onto something with seeking out that small community of a nonprofit, a cause you believe in, and getting a lot of those needs met that were met while in the military. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, first of all, if you're not on our newsletter, definitely go there, sign up. You'll hear about it, episodes in advance. Second of all, you'll find show notes for this episode. So everything we discuss, there's a book recommendation he has, as well as the resources he recommends. You'll find links there and a summary of the episode as well. Lastly, thanks to our sponsor, Audible.com. They're offering a free audiobook of your choice. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books, sign up, you get a free book. You can listen to it while you're going on the go, as you're driving around, or as you're working, or parachuting, or whatever it is you do. And Beyond the Uniform gets a little bit of money to help offset the cost of the show. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Nathan Smith. Joining me today in Alpharetta, Georgia, is Nathan Smith. Nathan, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks for having me.
So for our listeners, quick background on Nathan. He is the Chief Operating Officer at Hire Heroes USA, which provides free expert career coaching and job sourcing to hundreds of transitioning U.S. military members, veterans, and military spouses each week, and over 16,000 veterans and spouses since 2007. He started out at the Virginia Military Institute, after which he served in the Marine Corps for 7 years as an infantry officer. After his transition from the Marine Corps, he started at Hire Heroes USA as a deputy director and was subsequently promoted to executive director and then most recently chief operating officer. And just for listeners, I thought we could go through today. We'll talk about Hire Heroes because I think it's applicable to pretty much every veteran. And then we'll talk about Nathan and his role as COO and how he got there for those interested in that sort of career path. So Nathan, to start off, what would you want listeners to know about Hire Heroes USA?
Well, first of all, you know, I think people need to understand that this is the best-in-class organization in the country working with either transitioning military, veterans, or military families. There are bigger organizations, but there are none that are better. And our method is to individually assign the people who come to us to one of our expert transition specialists, and then that transition specialist is with each client until that client has a great outcome. And that could look like education, it could look like a full-time job, it could look like a mix of the two, but it's always going to be tailored to the needs of the client. And that's what really sets us apart from a very busy space and competitive space.
That's great. I mean, I love the thought of just having someone side by side with them and sticking with them until they achieve whatever they're looking for. And I imagine people have different ambitions when they come to you. I'm curious, if someone was on active duty, what's the process like? Like, how do they get started? How would they get involved?
There's really two ways that we do it. And about 90% of what we do is virtual. What we found is that's the most cost-effective and efficient way to reach our client base, is not having brick-and-mortar locations everywhere, but to be virtual. That means we can equally help someone down the road in Columbus, Georgia, at Fort Benning, or someone at Minot in North Dakota. But because of that, it means that the primary way that people come into our program is online. They can go to our website, www.hireheroesusa.org, click on the Veteran tab, or the Services tab, I suppose it is, and sign up online. And then there's a process that will take them through that and kind of put them in the queue to get connected to one of our transition specialists. The alternate way, particularly for the active duty population, is to work with a transition coordinator on a military installation, or they could also go to our website and look for upcoming workshops and then sign up for one of our workshops. We do about 50 or 60 per year on or near military installations. So it's either register online or sign up through a transition coordinator or online for one of our workshops.
And I imagine there's quite a few listeners who are maybe further out, they're not on active duty, and maybe they might want to either support Hire Heroes USA or might wonder if there's a way that they could benefit from Hire Heroes. How does it work for someone who's maybe transitioned less recently?
Yeah, if it's someone who's a couple years pre-separation, or someone who's maybe successfully made their transition but looking to make a career move, or even help their peer group, or even help veterans in general if they're not a veteran themselves, they can still go to our website, and there's a bunch of resources under certain tabs that they could access for resume guidance or LinkedIn guidance or interviewing skills. We also have a really robust network of volunteers, over 600 volunteers, most of whom have reached the pinnacle of their professional career and are looking to give back. And these volunteers end up being mentors for a lot of the clients that we work with. So either you could be a transitioning military member looking for a mentor, or you could be one who's made the transition and you want to be that mentor for others. You can sign up on our volunteer tab.
And for listeners, I'll put links in the show notes to all these, all the different sections on the website as well, to help you find those. One thing I'm always curious to dive into, Nathan, is I just imagine that in your time with Hire Heroes, you've seen so many different veterans and family members, and you've seen so many different challenges that they face. And I'm curious to learn and understand more about, like, what are some of the common challenges you see veterans facing, or mistakes that you see them making in the transition?
Well, it's a great question. I think the number one challenge that cuts across all services is lack of knowledge. Just lack of knowledge, because by definition, no active duty member has made the transition before. Of course, reserve and guard, it's different. But it's that lack of knowledge at what's available. And because of that, there's a lot of fear and anxiety that goes with that. The military does a great job at teaching us. It doesn't matter your service branch. You're going to be typically in a dangerous environment at some point, or operating dangerous machinery or equipment. And the military goes step by step in training us to do that, and then puts us alongside people who are experts at it, and with systems of accountability and so forth. And then you have a professional development throughout your career as long as you choose to stay in. It's just not typically that way in a lot of areas in the civilian workforce. And so as a, you know, myself transitioning out, I know we'll get to that later on, but, you know, I just didn't know what the options were out there. I had a pretty good resume, but it was tailored more towards the infantry because that's what I knew. And it wouldn't have really set me up for a great job. Now that I've been out for 7 years, I've got a lot better perspective on some of the possibilities that were open to me at the time that I never knew about. And so that's why Hire Heroes exists, is to kind of eradicate that knowledge gap and make sure that we're filling in that gap with good advice that's based on hard data and results, not just what we think is good, but what actually gets results. And then we find that service members are very successful at getting great jobs.
Are there any common misconceptions you see veterans having, that they have some thought of what their civilian career will look like or life as a civilian will look like, that is just something you come across quite frequently, just to alert people listening that that might be not true or might be a false expectation?
Yeah, I would have people bear a couple things in mind. One is veterans are more heavily represented in the federal government, and really government at every level, than any other demographic in the United States. And in fact, disabled veterans are more highly represented than even regular veterans. And so there are a couple of reasons to this, or theories behind it, one of which is just a service ethos that you would think that people who go serve in the military want to continue to serve their country, and so the federal government offers an access point to do that. There's things related to years of military service converting into years of federal service for retirement benefits and so forth. But I also think a lot of it has to do with, again, going back to that lack of knowledge and just assuming that, well, I'm kind of in a branch of the federal government now. This is my known quantity, and certainly the federal agencies recruit heavily from the military, and so it becomes a very comfortable path, but not always the best one. It's not necessarily the case that you're going to go from the military into, say, the post office, U.S. Postal Service, and stay for another 30 years. There's a non-trivial chance that the U.S. Postal Service will not exist in 30 years, although I'm not an advocate for or against that. But that's something that people need to think about, is that the entire way that we do work, whether it's government, private, nonprofit, is changing. And to not make decisions based off something that maybe an uncle or somebody who transitioned out 20 years ago is telling you, because they may not have the best insight. Another area that we see people going into is contract jobs. Once again, there's a lot of recruitment into the military of contractors. And there's some great, obviously great companies and great jobs that are out there. But if you're going to get offered $100,000 or more to go be a security guard in Afghanistan, you need to think about why you're being paid that much money to do something that you're paid a third of that to do in the military. And it's because there are risks and consequences that are a little bit different than when you're in the military. So just being eyes wide open to what these offers and opportunities are, and that a large dollar amount doesn't always translate into a great job opportunity. But that's often what, you know, it can be very tempting to take that large dollar amount, but it just may not be a good fit.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, there's definitely this sense that, you know, there's that such a big unknown. I relate to that in my own transition and not knowing what's out there. And so it seems like, although a lot of people go towards the familiar, that might not be the best suited for them. And it seems like, you know, some of the people I've interviewed who have taken a leap much further away from traditional veteran career paths, they had to take a significant step back in pay and seniority. And, you know, they got rid of that right out of the starting gate, and then over time were able to move up pretty quickly. But it seems like the further away you get from these established either government or contractor roles, the more of a step back you need to take. And that's going to it just takes a lot of courage and a lot of sacrifice to make that. And I think that becomes harder to do over time. The more, you know, the older we get, the more steeped in debt we get or ladled with other obligations, it becomes harder to take that risk. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on, I guess two of the other things I want to ask you about is, one is like education post-separation versus directly to industry. And then the second is how to think about, you know, taking steps back in one's career to transition further away from the military.
Yeah, that's That's a great point and something that we run into quite a bit. This idea that if I can take your second part of or second question first is, do I have to plan on taking a step back or maybe a step down, whether it's level of responsibility or level of income when I transition out? And the answer is it depends, right? That kind of that infamous Marine Corps saying it's situationally dependent. Because I know plenty of people that transitioned out, and when you look at their total benefits package, they are doing better off than they were in the military. Plus, they would argue they have better quality of life. I know an equal number of people who did have to take that step back. It certainly was the case for me. I was paid significantly less when I transitioned out than when I was in as a Marine captain. I think it really depends on what your personal financial situation is. You may not be able to afford that step back or that step down to pursue an interesting opportunity. You may need that bird in the hand, as it were. That being said, it may not be presented to you that way. You may not actually have an earning opportunity that meets your financial requirements, in which case you're just going to have to make the best of your situation and live pretty lean for a little bit. But I would remind your listeners that unlike the military, which has very established and some would say antiquated personnel systems and levels of accession and promotion and so forth, it's usually not that way in most civilian environments. If you go into it to a new job and you're killing it, you could get promoted in 6 months. You know, an opportunity could open itself in another office that you could take where you just wouldn't have had that opportunity in the military. So there is usually a larger degree of flexibility and with it corresponding opportunity in the civilian sector. To talk about your first question, the education piece, we do find that education, formal educations with a degree at the end of it, does tend to be a great option for a lot of folks. You know, I would encourage people not to use the GI Bill just to delay a career decision for several years and take the stipend. Yes, it does help you figure some things out, but it's not an ideal. And ultimately, you're going to be behind the pack when it comes to earning if you just did it to stave off a decision. But for a lot of folks, their career path does require a degree. And without it, they're really going to be doing themselves a disservice and kind of staying back from the most competitive elements of their industry without it. And so I think that goes back to strategic planning, talking to people on the outside as well as career planners and transition coordinators on the inside. Talk to our folks at Hire Heroes USA, and we can help with those types of decisions in terms of is education and pursuing this degree the logical next step for me.
This is pretty anecdotal, but as you were talking, it made me think of another question, which was, I know that there are so many different potential career paths for veterans, and that's a big reason why I do this podcast, is to explore those and make those make veterans aware of those. What is your sense, or do you have a sense of, like, what are some typical career paths that you see veterans taking? Just to kind of maybe throw out food for thought for people listening to consider as possible careers for them as well.
Well, at the scale that we operate, because you have to remember we helped over 15,000 people last year. So at the scale we operate, our demographics look very much like the transitioning Department of Defense population. And what that also means is we're going to be overrepresented in the federal and state governments. But there are some really interesting avenues or career paths that I think a lot of veterans maybe don't intuitively think about. Certainly healthcare and IT are always up there in the top five of the industries that the clients we work with go into. Security is up there, but we also find a lot of veterans are going into like client facing or customer service facing roles, not necessarily in the service industry, but in any type of job. They're used to working with people and they get along really well. A really intriguing to me, although it was my path as well, area that I think a lot of veterans don't think about is teaching and nonprofits. It's this idea of an alternative to working in government, but still giving back and doing something that's mission-driven, that you're going to work around typically people who have the same values that you do. And so we often see veterans that are getting hired as coaches, teachers, and nonprofit workers, or oftentimes managers and executives. And working in the nonprofit world can be very rewarding. It can have the same level of flexibility and agility that you might get in the business world if you go into the right nonprofit. And you're getting exposure into a lot of other sections of the United States that you might not if you worked in, say, oil and gas, and you're stuck in an oil field in South Texas. So that's an interesting opportunity that we've certainly benefited from at Hire Heroes by hiring 70-plus veterans now. We value what they bring, and we think it makes us more competitive in the space, and by extension, it makes us better with our clients.
That's great. I mean, it definitely strikes me that in a lot of the interviews I have with veterans, one of the trends is that they miss that aspect of service. They miss that aspect of camaraderie and connection and value and giving back. And so many of the things that it does sound like you would be able to get in teaching and nonprofits and coaching and those other fields that you mentioned. So, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited in a second to kind of step into your background, because I think that's also a great potential for a lot of veterans to consider being involved with a cause that they believe in. And I love that you highlighted that it does associate come with a little bit more flexibility probably than they had in the military, and some of the perks that most active duty people would associate with working as a civilian. One other question that I wanted to ask you about is, and this is just top of mind because a friend had reached out and I didn't have a good answer, and I'm wondering if you might have a better answer than the one I was able to give him. He had asked about a friend of his family who is, has separated multiple years ago and is just facing challenges. The person's been unemployed for over a year, and the friend and his family were trying to figure out what can we do to support this person. He's a veteran. He's very independent. He's not looking for other people to help or solve his problem. And so he was trying to figure out, how can I help this person without insulting them or without doing harm? And I'm wondering if you've come across that or had any thoughts on what someone might be able to do in that situation to help that loved one.
It's a great question. And, truly it depends on the individual situation, but I certainly have had Marines that served with me during two tours in Iraq who I viewed them from a distance. And listen, my full-time job is to help veterans get jobs. And it was somewhat perplexing for me to try to weigh in, help with resumes, give career guidance. And this is not coming from an amateur. It's someone who knows what I'm talking about and have, we've got over 17,000 people that we know that this works because it worked for them. And to just recognize eventually that what they didn't need was a lot of do this, don't do that, do this. They just needed some faith and some coaching and some people to be on their side. That being said, we're proponents of tough love at Hire Heroes. It's one of the reasons why we like having veterans on our team is because they've been there. And if I'm a Marine infantryman, I can talk to another Marine infantryman who can't really tell me a lot in terms of go away, I don't want to listen to you because you don't know what I'm going through, because we do. So I think it's a balance between coaching, coming alongside as opposed to pushing or pulling. And just recognize that there are probably some other things going on beyond the career elements. There are probably some, or there might be some emotional or mental health things. There may be some substance abuse. And I'm not trying to paint a broad brush for veterans or why they might be unemployed long term. But there are probably, or there's almost certainly other factors involved if someone is long term unemployed. The other thing I would do in terms of that idea of coaching or maybe trying to get some early wins is directing or suggesting volunteer opportunities, right? So maybe take some of the pressure off in terms of going out and finding a job, and then it has to be the right job, and what if it's not a cultural fit, and instead say, what do you enjoy? What did you enjoy about the military, and how can we find some of those elements in the civilian world. If it's coaching, go find a local high school team to be an assistant coach on. Go find a nonprofit that needs volunteers. These are resume building things. These are things that are getting this person engaged with the community, and hopefully by extension is building their confidence and getting them beyond whatever this momentary lapse is, and get them producing and feeling confident so that they can then go out and get the next steps.
That's great. I think that's fantastic advice, and I love that thought of just racking up some quick wins. And I do believe that most veterans have a common value of wanting to contribute, wanting to make a difference, wanting to be part of something bigger than ourselves. And so I love that thought where, you know, it's easier to do that in a volunteering capacity. And there's so many ways in which their expertise and their life experience could help so many other people. And so I love that thought of putting them in a position where they are able to give back and they're able to see that value. And that could build, I imagine, could build up some momentum to help them find a professional way to get that value as well. I wanted to switch gears and kind of talk more about your career path, but anything we didn't cover about Hire Heroes that you wanted to just share before to move on to more of your role?
Just one thing to highlight is that we are completely free to our clients. So if you have proof of military service or you have a family member who served and you can prove that, it's no charge whatsoever to you. And we also are not in receipt of government funding. We're a public charity that is funded publicly through foundations and individual Americans who believe in what we do because they believe in the value of the service members for this country. So those would be two things that sometimes people get skittish about the nonprofit environment and think that we're making money off veterans. It's just not the case.
That's incredible. That's really commendable that to think of all that coming from philanthropy rather than through any sort of government subsistence. That's really, really cool. Well, I would love to hear, you know, first of all, if you were speaking with someone on active duty, how would you describe what you do as the chief operations officer?
Yeah, as a COO, I allocate scarce resources to accomplish our mission is the best way I could say it.
And what does that look like on a day-to-day basis? If you were to pick maybe like a typical day, what does that translate to in terms of when you get in the office and the types of things that you're doing until you leave?
You know, fortunately, a lot of what I do is basic bread and butter leadership. It's one of the things that the Marine Corps trained me to do very well, and it's something I enjoy doing and feel I'm reasonably good at it. And so I've got a number of directors who report to me, who in turn have managers and then other employees. And so a lot of what I do, probably half my average day, is a director coming to my office or maybe the chief programs officer coming into my office, closing the door, and we talk about whether it's a personnel issue or whether it's an idea for a new program or whether it's, hey, we need to make this adjustment over in this program or in this office. So it's a lot of problem solving on a day-to-day basis, but it's being done in concert with other folks that I have a very high degree of respect for and who themselves have their own ethos of excellence. And so it's a really neat environment where you're collaboratively solving problems within very limited constraints because we're a nonprofit, and always with this view towards it's all about the clients. You know, we only exist because there are unemployed veterans and military family members, and we think that's an absolute shame. And so knowing that we're all laser focused on this narrow mission means that it helps our decision-making process, but it means we're all on the same page. And so I very much enjoy that aspect of the job. Other parts of the job are related to developing products, reviewing things as diverse as marketing materials or reviewing a new development plan or looking at next year's budget, formalizing job description. So one of the things about working in a under 100-person company, which we call it a company even though it's a nonprofit because we run very much like a business, is as a CEO, you're involved in just about everything. And so no day is the same, and that keeps it fresh and interesting.
That's great. Yeah, I've always felt like anything in operations is so well suited to veterans, and I always admired at the COO level. It seems like you're able to put your hands into pretty much anything that you would like or you feel would benefit from your experience. And so I imagine that the diversity of your day really keeps it fulfilling because you're constantly tackling new problems, constantly working with different people, and you get that overview of everything, every facet of the company.
Yeah, that's right. And I joke, but in the infantry, we always called ourselves the utility players. And certainly at other companies, there may be more room for specialization, but I think it's small business. And of course, the majority of Americans work for small businesses, businesses that are under 50 employees. I think you can maximize the potential of a guy who is in the infantry because it had less to do with I was trained to do this, and instead it's a mentality and a way of thinking. Yes, you do have to become good at the nuts and bolts. You do have to learn about basic things like nonprofit management and my role in budgeting and things like that. But those are all teachable. What's less teachable is the mentality that we bring of problem solving and doing more with less.
And let's back up to when you were on active duty in the Marine Corps. How did you make that decision to leave the Marine Corps?
There are a number of factors at play. I did my initial 4 years, and at the very tail end of that 4 years, I was coming off an extremely difficult deployment to the Habaniya area in Iraq. So this was summer of 2006 to about January of 2007. We were averaging about one Marine or sailor killed every 2 weeks. And at that point in time, I really felt that the war was going to be lost. Happily, it changed. The surge, we were just on the very cusp of the surge. That did change things around. But I guess the point is, I had some really difficult experiences during two combat tours in Iraq. And at that time, I really felt like I was not going to do a full career. But I also knew I really didn't have anything set up in terms of what I want to do next as a civilian job. And so I signed on for 3 more years to do security forces out by Seattle at a naval base. I was still around infantry and Marines doing what I loved to do, which was lead them in service to the nation. And I felt like that would give me time to think about what was next. During those 3 years, I actually did not find my wife or a job, which were the two things that kind of had as goals during that last duty station. And I didn't find either, but what I did was stay in contact with Brian Stand, who's the current president and CEO of Higher Heroes USA. But we served together in 3rd Battalion, 2nd Marines. And so I just asked him, as someone who was already out, hey, what's out there? What should I look to do? And that's when he told me about Higher Heroes and brought me on. But yeah, there are a number of reasons I got out, mostly related to post-traumatic stress and not feeling like I necessarily wanted to take a company to Afghanistan. I had a little bit of doubt whether I'd be able to do that multitasking. Looking back on it, I feel confident I would have done great. But that was a question at the time, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't put myself in a situation of leading a couple hundred Marines in an environment that I questioned my abilities.
I think it's incredible too that although the primary objectives weren't obtained while you were in that Seattle area, that you stayed in contact with someone who ultimately led to your current job. And how did that come about? Like I was curious to learn about that first job search and how you ended up at Higher Heroes.
Yeah, it was a really stressful year. I mean, like so many service members that I've met, even though I knew or intended to get out at the end of that 3 years, and I had a very set date, as all of us do with the military, I didn't plan very well against it. I threw myself into my current role, leading Marines, and some of it was just a little bit of fear-based and not knowing what I should do. Nobody put a path in front of me that said, if you do this, this, and this, you'll get a great job. And so I didn't do this, this, and this. And I just kind of waited for something to come up. And it was a really, really ineffective way to move towards transition. Again, about a year out, I connected with Brian, was really starting to stress. In fact, I lost about 10 pounds during my last year in the Marine Corps, and this was with no change in diet or exercise. I was working out the same amount I always did. Couldn't figure it out, thought I had some weird wasting disease, and then went to the docs, actually, on the naval base, and had them do a blood test and all that stuff, and finally one of them came to me and said, "Hey, sir, is there anything you might be worried about?" And I said, "No, absolutely not," right? Typical infantry officer answer. And when I thought about it, I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm worried about my transition. I didn't know what was next. And for someone who'd always been goal-oriented and fixed on this next whatever it was going to be, not knowing what my transition was going to look like was really nerve-wracking. And that's when I started reaching out to folks on the outside, family members, relatives, friends, fellow Marines who had transitioned out, sent them my resume. They gave great feedback on it, pretty harsh feedback, I would say, but it was very direct from what I needed. And that's where Brian came into play. And honestly, without his job offer, I think I had one job offer within the government on the base I was at, but that was it. I mean, I had two choices for getting out. And I went with the one that I knew and trusted Brian, and I thought the mission was inspiring, and I was going to be able to continue to lead. And that's why I made that decision.
That's great. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I appreciate the candor in your discussion on that, of just how stressful this really is. I don't think, you know, this is the 105th interview. I don't think that there's a single person I've interviewed that hasn't experienced that same stress of and that uncertainty of it. It is a major change, and I think a lot of people discount how big of a transition it is from military to civilian, and just having that constantly weighing on you of wondering what you're going to do next. It's a lot of stress. I'm wondering, you know, now that you're in the world of nonprofits, and as well as in the COO role, what are some signs for someone listening that they might really enjoy life in a nonprofit, or they might really like a career in operations?
You know, I think it's I was fortunate to be able to do both. And of course, there are plenty of operational roles outside of nonprofits, and there are plenty of roles within a nonprofit that are non-operational. So if I could parse out the two, in terms of COO, unless, you know, if you're planning on going into a mid or large company, they're not going to hire a sergeant coming out as COO. They're not going to hire me as COO, even with 7 years experience on the outside. So you need to know what your professional experience is and how that marries up with the skills and responsibilities at different levels. For me, it was a perfect fit coming into, at the time, a 7-person nonprofit with a CEO I believed in, and then we were able to grow it to just over 90 full-time employees over 7 years. And so I was able to grow as we grew as an organization. You know, that being said, I think most people in the military, particularly anybody who's a company grade officer or staff NCO, you're going to have the leadership. That is something that the military does very, very well. And so the leadership is there. You just have to marry it up with some skill sets. You need to know budgeting. You should probably be familiar with QuickBooks. It's not going to be harmful to know a Salesforce, a CRM, or something like that. So having some of these technical skills is really, really important in today's economy. Already mentioned some of the things that brought me to a nonprofit in terms of aligning with the mission. I knew at least one person who was going to be there that I knew had the same values that I did. You know, nonprofits are designed to fill in the gap between the government and business. And so that's something that's very appealing to me, because I don't believe that government is a solution. I believe government has a narrow focus, or it should. And so this idea that you could be agile, be flexible, innovate, do all the things that tech companies are doing and that the best companies are doing today, but you could apply that to a nonprofit, was really, really appealing to me. Quantifying people dealing with people, measuring it, improving it. If you're a person who likes solving problems, doing more with less, taking scarce resources and making them stretch as far as they can, to get great outcomes for people, nonprofit's going to be a good place for you to work.
That's a great description. I love that thought of a lot of the things that draw people to startups, and then realizing that you can have that within the nonprofit world and the benefit of knowing that you're having a fantastic impact on people who deserve it. You talked a little bit about QuickBooks and budgeting and Salesforce. I'm always curious to get my guest's perspective on what resources they would recommend to listeners. And that could be books or programs or conferences, but just anything that you found has helped you in your civilian career that might help someone who's listening.
Yeah, well, there are two things that helped for me. One is maybe not going to be as helpful to your listeners, depending, I guess it depends on their situation or environment, but one might be. So I was fortunate that when I left the Marine Corps and came on board Hire Heroes, there also happened to be one of the best public administration programs in the country over at the University of Georgia. And so my GI Bill was full up at that point, so I was able to sign on for a Master's of Public Administration and take a couple classes per semester. So I had a three-year track instead of a kind of a traditional two-year track. But I was able to do that while I was working full time. And the great benefit of that was that it was mutually beneficial between my employment and my education. What I was learning on the job was stuff that I was sharing with my classmates to help them. And what I was learning in school, I was coming back and implementing in the company or in the nonprofit. So I found that to be incredibly beneficial and really helped me in some of the technical areas like nonprofit budgeting or grant writing in particular. These were things that you can read books on, but it was just, you know, I felt more comfortable being taught it formally in school. It made it seem to me like it was probably the right answer. The second part, which may not be as helpful to folks, is just learning by people who are doing. So I just buried my head or put my head down and buried myself in some of these things like QuickBooks, budgeting, and had people around me who were a notch or two above me. And so some of it was us figuring it out together. But what I found was none of this stuff is very complex. There are certainly things out there like the financial industry and engineering and other fields that do have a lot of complexity to them. But a lot of nonprofits and even for-profits, all you need to do is be willing to learn and have the humility to realize that you don't know it all. But you can learn almost anything in 2 weeks. And so that was the mentality I brought here was, okay, I don't know how to do this. It's a pretty important part of this company. And for me to be able to oversee this effectively, I need to have a working knowledge of it. Let me just talk to the person who's expert at it and get smart on it.
That's great. I mean, I love the thought of the education alongside work and just being able to benefit the student body with your experience, but also being able to directly apply what you're learning to your job. I think that would have helped me get a lot more out of my MBA is like literally having something that I could apply it to and making it more practical rather than theoretical. And I love the twin characteristics you had of humility and just kind of a willingness to learn and realize that nothing's going to be necessarily rocket science, but it's all about being honest that you don't know something and surrounding yourself with people who do and just really bearing down and getting down to learn it. So I love that thought of approaching problems in that way. I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is, you know, we've talked about Hire Heroes USA, we've talked about your own career path, but what else would you want for veteran and recently transitioned veterans listening to know, or what final words of wisdom would you have for them?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think, and I want to keep this relatively short to be respectful of your time and theirs, but I think one of the things to know is I would recommend to everybody a book that is co-authored by General Mattis, now Secretary of Defense Mattis, called Warriors and Citizens. The reason I recommend this, there's a lot of research in it, but the premise is there a gap or a divide between our military and the civilian society that needs that military? And so there's some really fascinating insights in this book. But the reason I bring it up is because there are structural challenges related to transition. It's not just companies don't appreciate the military. It's not just, hey, you're in the Army in Afghanistan and you don't know what's out there. there are a lot more structural elements to this that aren't going to be solved by the government transition programs or even nonprofits like Hire Heroes USA. To me, this always comes back to the individual transitioning service member. There are plenty of resources out there. There are plenty of people that are on your side. But if you don't have a narrow vision of what you want so that you can focus, if you're open to everything, which is kind of the infamous line that we get from most of the people we work with, hey, I'll move anywhere and I'll do anything, and they think that makes it easier for you to help them find a job, whereas it's the exact opposite, right? What we need is for you to narrow down and focus, align with mentors who are out there, align with organizations like us, and together, you know, we can overcome this structural divide between the all-volunteer force and a society that less and less knows what the all-volunteer force goes through. And so rather than being bitter or angry or shaking our fist at the government, we just say, this is a reality. And so we can have a positive attitude about it, knowing that it's a reality, and then identify that it's a challenge, but it's not a 100% barrier. And then, like everybody in the military, we overcome challenges. So just knowing what the why behind it, it's not that we're inferior as veterans. It's nothing like that. It's just this is a reality. And so how do you overcome it? Well, there's probably tools and ways that I can go about thinking about this that will help me achieve and overcome.
I'm so glad you said that. I think that that's so great. And I think you articulated it really well. And I think that's come up on other interviews, is this thought that it does seem like most veterans think it's an attribute to be open to anything. And in most cases, that makes it very hard to find something. And it certainly makes it hard on the other end when people reach out for help and they're like, hey, can you, you know, do you know anyone who's hiring? It's like, no, I mean, I'm sure I do, but that's just way too broad, you know. But if someone comes and they're like, hey, I'm looking for an operational role in a consumer products company related to food that has 100 people or less, it's like, okay, that I can work with. But otherwise, it's just people are so busy. If you give them something too generic, it's impossible to help them. And I think that applies to everything, I imagine, like resumes and interview prep and everything. If you're trying to be all things to all people, you're going to miss out in an economy that's becoming so much more specialized and so much more focused. So I just love the way that you explain that. I think that's so spot on.
Well, you're the expert. You've done 105 of these. I'm just happy to help.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, I appreciate your time and your advice and all this. For listeners, I'll put in show notes, links to everything that we talked about. And definitely check out Hire Heroes USA at hireheroesusa.org. Lots of great resources there. 100% free for veterans. If you're thinking about a transition, if you've already made that transition, they've got tons there to help you. So thank you so much, Nathan.
Thank you, Justin. Really appreciate it being on.
Surface, surface, surface.
All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you had a great 4th of July weekend. If you haven't already, sign up for our newsletter at beyondtheuniform.io. If you haven't taken advantage of the audible.com offer for a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners, check that out at beyondtheuniform.io/books. And if you have a little bit of extra time this week and you can give us a great rating on iTunes, that'll help get the word out about what we're doing. Thanks, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with our veterans about their civilian career.